Intervju Radija Študent.
Med letošnjimi gosti Vilenice je tudi izraelski pisatelj Edgar Keret. Izbor njegovih kratkih zgodb je bil pred nekaj meseci objavljen tudi v slovenščini in nosi naslov Še zadnja zgodba in konec. Najbolj je poznan kot pisec kratkih zgodb, a je avtor tudi nekaj scenarijev in grafičnih romanov, objavil pa je tudi avtobiografsko knjigo Sedem let obilja. Nekakšen memoar, katerega naslov aludira na biblično podobo sedmih obilnih in ubožnih let. Sedem let obilja Keretu predstavlja čas, ki ga je lahko preživel še kot oče svojemu sinu in še vedno kot sin svojega očeta. Čas knjige je torej zamejen s sinovim rojstvom in očetovo smrtjo. V intervjuju govori o svojih literarnih nazorih, o pisanju, o svojem življenju in stvarih, ki ga motivirajo k pisanju.
Okay, Edgar Keret, hello. Nice to have you here in Slovenia. First, I would like to learn about your writing routine.
Well, I don't have a routine. It's not that I wake up every day and write between hours. I live my life in a very failing and uncoordinated manner. You know, I keep being late to places and not doing the thing I'm supposed to. And I think all the time I have stories in my head. And then when some of them refuse to let go and stay with me, at some point I find myself sitting down and writing them. But sometimes I can write for 15 hours a day, and sometimes I cannot write for a few months. And mostly it has to do with the chores I have, the duties I have. And I think that for me, to talk about writing routine is always seemed like something very strange, because there is something about writing that always seemed to me like so spontaneous and crazy. It's like a getting crazy routine, you know, let's do a wild thing routine. I think there's something, at least the way that I write in my nature, that the story kind of surprises me, you know, it kind of jumps on my back, it's behind the sofa and goes boo, and it frightens me, but it's never kind of something that I can premeditate or formulate.
Okay. I think it was your interview for Granta magazine where you say that fiction is in a way more real to you than a life itself, because in fiction you actually get to release your ideas and your views of life, whereas in real life you have these trouble with consequences, as you mentioned. That whatever you do or whatever you say has consequences. So, in a way, I think that makes your fiction more real than the life itself. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that the life that we live, it's kind of an act of suppression. You know, the fact that we're social creatures, we don't want to hurt each other, we don't want to get hurt, makes us all the time not exercise our feeling or emotion to the fullest, you know. So I'm saying, so let's say now we're having an interview, which means you'll ask me questions and I'll answer them. Now, if I have this very strong urge to touch your nose with my finger, I will not do that, because you will get offended, or
probably,
I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, so, but in my story, I can touch your nose, and maybe in my story, you punch me or you say to me, whoa, it's nice, can you touch my forehead too? You know, I don't know. But I can release all those kind of things that all the time are not, they're not released. You know, when I published my last collection of short stories, and my wife told me that it really bothered her that there are so many husband cheating on their wives in the book. And I said to her, would you rather that I write about loyal husbands and cheat on you? In my stories, it's something that I can deal with my yearnings and my strange feelings. You know, sometimes when I go down the street, I see a man with a cane and I feel like kicking his cane. Okay. I will not kick his cane, but I feel like doing it. And the fact that there is some kind of safe haven where all those emotions and the yearnings that don't get realized can just be released with no thinking and with no need to report for them and with no guilt, just they can just be there, then I think it's a great gift both to a writer and a reader. You know, I mean, think about how many people had read and enjoyed Lolita. Mm-hmm. Now, those same people are not necessarily for elderly or older people having sex with underage girls. But in the context of a fiction book, they can acknowledge the fact that maybe such an attraction can exist.
Okay. Is publishing nonfiction different than publishing fiction? Your nonfiction was just released in English.
For sure, you know, it's a, you know, an fiction book, The Seven Good Years. Mm-hmm. It came out, I think, in 13 languages so far, but it didn't come out in Hebrew, and it will not come out in Hebrew because, because I think that fiction is, I feel that in fiction I can be completely sincere and it's safe because it's a made-up story. But when you talk about your child, your wife, your father, then everything is so specific and concrete, you know, and in fiction, it's like you're telling the truth, but it's under some kind of cipher, you know, like it's a code, like, you know, the enigma in the Second World War. You say to people what you feel, but they cannot totally decode it. And when you write nonfiction, then you're extremely exposed. It was, for me, publishing this book felt very much, I had the same anxiety that I had when I published my first book. When I published my first book of fiction, I was sure that everybody's going to figure me out, that everybody's going to read it and say, oh, he hates this guy, he likes this guy, he's afraid of this. And then I discovered that in fiction, it doesn't work that way. In the end, they read a story with fictional character, but with the nonfiction book, it's exactly that. You know, in the book, I say who and what I like and who and what I'm afraid of, and it's out there on the page. It's very scary.
It is, I agree. And some of them, even in your fiction titles, a lot of your ideas are rather obscure or exaggerated or not very common. That's put mildly. So are you ever worried that, you know, people are going to connect that with you or take you as a, you know, a weirdo? Or you are, you know, vulnerable or exposed in front of your readers?
Well, I think all my life people thought I was strange, you know.
Yes.
And
why?
Weird. I think, you know, because as much as I tried to hide my thoughts, they were always there. And I think that in the bottom line, I think all people are very weird and strange, but some of us are better at hiding it than mm-hmm. others. And I was never very good at hiding it, you know.
Mm-hmm. With your attitudes towards fiction and your cynicist style of writing, I wonder what you think of poetry. Do you ever write it yourself?
I love poetry, but I don't dare writing poetry because I think with me there's something very, very associative and wild. And the plot that you have in fiction keeps me from running to all different directions. And I think that there is something about poetry, the fact that it really doesn't have this supporting column, which is the narrative or the tale. Not having that, I don't think that I can write four sentences that would make sense together. I need the story to keep me focused. I need the narrative to glue everything together.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of plot, I had an impression that you use... as your themes or ideas in your stories, that you use your pet hates. You know, they're pet hate driven, like that you have a couple of annoyances.
For example?
People who are constantly late, or people with dogs, or, yeah, you know, stuff like, yeah, that. Completely innocent, but something that drives you mad.
Yeah, I have a few of those. I don't usually write about them, but
no?
I have a few of those.
Because I thought some of those are in your stories. They must be.
No, they must be, but I'm not aware of them. But I can tell you that the thing I hate the most...
Yeah?
And somehow in Israel we have many of them, is people that go on escalators, mm-hmm. and when they finish the escalator, they just get off the escalator and start talking on their mobile phone, and you go right behind them.
Yeah.
But they're totally not aware of you in their space. I think that the thing that always drives me crazy is when people are not aware of your private space, when they stand very close to you or do this thing. And I think that usually... when you're annoyed, it has to do with the fear. And I think that for me, it's this fear of feeling that I'm invisible or non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that somebody can stand so close to me and it doesn't intimidate him or doesn't make him go back. It's just, I have to check if I didn't become invisible or something.
But in fact, you, Edgar Keret, a writer, you are completely visible. In fact, you are often invited to give a public opinion on general state of affairs in Israel. How comfortable are you with that position?
I hate it.
I hate. Then no, why do you do it?
I do it because I think it's my civic duty. But I think that, you know, I think that when you write fiction, then basically you take simple reality and show how complex and ambiguous it is. When you write an opinion piece for newspaper, is basically you take a very complex reality and claim that it's actually very simple. Mm-hmm. I don't like writing something that has a pragmatic bottom line. I don't like writing a piece telling people you should do this and not do that. I don't think that art was made for that, but I live in a society where I see, you know, freedom of speech or principles of equality being constantly threatened, mm-hmm. and I want to react to it. You know, if I was a bodybuilder, I would lift something in the air. The only thing I know is how to write, so I write about it. But giving political comments is really, really something I hate. And again, you know, and the outcomes of them is always getting yourself in conflict and getting yourself hated and having death threats and having all those kind of unpleasant experiences. You know, when you write fiction, usually what you get from people is empathy and love. When you write political piece, usually what you get from them is resentments and threats.
But it's death threats, really?
Yeah, for me, for my son, for my wife.
That's crazy. That was in Israel or abroad?
In Israel, during the Gaza wars, mm-hmm. and radical right-wing people would say to me, we will throw your son from a plane without a wow. parachute, we will kill you, we will rape your wife, you know, all kind of thing.
How did you react?
The way that I always react, you know, to unpleasant things, I ignore them. In a very childlike ostrich kind of way, you know, some states they offered to send somebody to guard us, and I said I won't have my child growing up, you know, with a guy with a gun walking around him. And what I know is that those threats usually come from social media, and it's so much easier to release a threat than to actually execute it. That I hope that, you know, those people are too lazy or too afraid to actually do anything. But it's amazing how, you know, I think it has to do a lot with social media, but also with religious fundamentalism in my country, how this idea, how disagreement becomes a taboo. You know, like, I remember that just 10 or 20 years, I could say the same thing, and people would say to me, you're wrong or you're stupid. But now when you say things, they say you're a traitor, you know, you should be killed. There's something about the ability to contain disagreements that kind of disappeared, evaporated. Many times you have a feeling there is no real dialogue. That when you talk with most people about politics, there's no real chance that they listen to you and change their mind. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more like people wrestling or punching each other than people really trying to broaden their minds.
War is a constant backdrop in your fiction, but what I like about your handling it is that it's very low key. You make no too big of a drama about it. Could you? But that's, I guess, how you live your life in Israel. But to us, it's something, you know, rather unconventional.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was in the UK with my new book, and I got a question from. Maybe I can ask him to speak less loud. So I was in London, and I had a reading, and after the reading, somebody said to me, with all the bombing and the violence in the Middle East, how can you keep living there? And I said to him, with all the rain and gray skies that you have in London, how can you keep living here? You know, I think that really when I go to England for 2 weeks, I become depressed because of the weather. But when I live in a reality where there is constant violence around me, I'm not that aware of it because that's the reality that I know. You know, I was born after the 67 war. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to school when the 73 war had started. I went to high school when the Lebanon war had started. All my life, when I have to pick up data, I just move between one violent incident to another. So for me, it's scary how easy you can get used to living an abnormal life.
Okay, when you write, are you interested in literary aesthetics? Meaning, are you interested how your words will sound? Will it be beautiful? Will the sentences be eloquent and elegant and stuff like that? Or is it just about the story?
Yeah, for me, it's all about the story in the hierarchy. You know, the main thing is the story and the necessity of that story to be told.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is that one should feel some kind of urgency about the stories that it tells. I think that when people try to think about the too much about the aesthetic of the stories, then they turn the pyramid on its head. You know, the meaning become less important than the structure or the beauty or the meter of the text. And I feel the other way around is that everything that is in the that exists in the story is basically there to serve the story. And if it's not necessary, then you should throw it overboard. For me, story is more emotions than a body, you know. So basically, it's all about trying to get somewhere, hoping to get there, being afraid of what will wait for you there. But it's all about this kind of constant movement more than everything.
So, which leads us to what's literature about? You know, what is literature about?
For me, literature is about empathy. Because when we live our life, we always live them from a certain point of view. You know, we all see reality from a certain height, which is our height, from a certain angle, which is our own personal angle. And the literature allows us to break that. It allows us to see how life looks from a different perspective. And I think that there is something terribly humanizing about it, you know. I think that, you know, that the closest you'll ever get to be an African refugee would be to read a book about an African refugee. You know, the closest that you ever get to be a middle-aged, sex-crazed man would be reading a book about that. And I think that there's something so humanizing about it that sometimes when I see a person and I feel that I get obsessed about thinking bad thoughts about this person, then as an exercise for my mental health, I sit down and write a story about him. And when I finish the story, you know, I can still dislike him, but I can't alienate myself from him because I was trying to be him. I was trying to see reality through his eyes.
Your style of writing, I think, cannot be crafted. You either have it or not. So what do you think about creative writing practices or workshops or courses? Have you ever done it yourself or taught it yourself?
I never done it myself. Actually, I studied math and philosophy in university, but I teach in university creative writing, and I think teaching is not the right word for it because I don't really believe that you can teach people mm-hmm. how to write.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that you can create the perfect acoustics in which they can teach themselves how to write. You know, I think it's closer to when you go to a psychologist for analysis. You know, it's not that the psychologist teaches you how to live a better life, but he gives you an atmosphere which helps you become aware of what's bothering you and what's stopping you from fixing that thing that bothers you. So I really think that, you know, I don't want my students to write the ways that I write, but I want them to take the same route that I did to discover the true voice and the true interest. And I think that too many people try to write like something, you know, like a classic, or to write something that is important, or to, you know, they have this, or to write something that will succeed. This is always a mistake. I think that for me, the goal is to write yourself. And actually, if you write yourself, you know, then you're the world champion in being yourself. Nobody can write yourself better than you. But while if you try to write the modern Moby Dick, then, you know, most chances that Herman Melville wrote that one better than you.
Have you ever tried longer forms of writing?
Yeah, well, the thing is that the process that I have when I sit down and I write fiction is that I never think about the length. You know, I don't know what's going on, and there is something so energized about it that it's basically like very much like running as fast as you can. You can, if you don't calculate this, you cannot run for very far. I think that I wrote one novella which was longer. I wrote screenplays for feature films. But it's much easier for me to write a long screenplay than to write a long story, because there's something about screenplays that they're always premeditated and they're in a public space. Because when you write screenplays, it's very much like writing a recipe for a cake. When you write a recipe for a cake, you have to be coherent. When you bake a cake, you don't need to be coherent. You just need to be tasty in the end. So when I write a screenplay, I distance myself a little bit from what I write, which helps me kind of be more rational about it. When I write fiction, it's totally spontaneous and uncontrollable. It's very much like when you dream a dream, you cannot make this dream as long as you want. It starts when it wants to and it stops when it wants to.
British critics have concluded that your work has matured with The Seven Good Years. And you said that it came with the birth of your son.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, the truth is that if I have to deal with my most mature work is my story collection, Suddenly a Knock on the Door, which is the first book of fiction I wrote after my son was born. Actually, with The Seven Good Years, you know, I cannot look at it as mature or immature, because when you write nonfiction, you basically write about your life. So I feel that I don't deserve as much credit for this book as others, because I didn't make up those stories. They just happened to me. But we suddenly knock on the door. For sure, I feel that there is something about becoming a father that makes you much more reflexive, much more aware of yourself and of your thoughts. I think that when I was younger, there was something about me that many times enjoyed the situation of conflict and of knowing that I'm right, you know? And when, as you grow up and you become a parent, then basically the ability to advocate for life, you know, to be somebody who promotes life, or somebody who's more kind of or to be more optimistic, you have a greater need for that, because when you're a parent, you know, you deal with your children now I had a chance to think about it, so I give an answer. The most important thing that when you become a father, that then you become an interface between your child and real life. So every time when your child asks you about something in life, then you can't say to him, this happened this way because it sucks, because people are assholes. You know, you have to say to him something positive and constructive. And the only way that you can do it and that he'll actually believe it is that if you believe it yourself. So part of the work of being a good parent is trying to become a better person. Because if you won't be able to do that, then there's no way in the world that you can cheat or fool your kid into becoming a better person himself. And I think that there's something about this process that helped me see things in a more kind of a complex positive light. And I think that this kind of trickled down to my fiction too, so this is why Suddenly a Knock on the Door is basically my favorite work.
Great, thank you for your time, looking forward to your reading.
Thanks.
Intervju je pripravila Andreja. Intervju Radija Študent.